This is day four at the 58th New Zealand Christadelphian Bible School. Our first period speaker is Brother David Stiles on Lessons from David's Life. His subtitle for today is Leaders Who Were Not. This is the fourth talk in the series, and the introductory reading is 2 Samuel 17. Brother David.
Good morning, everyone. Good to see you all. I hope everyone's feeling bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I had a good night's sleep last night. Hope everyone else did.
Pleased to hear that.
Yeah, thank you, Gordon. So, a little bit of housekeeping before we begin. Just for the record, do not come to Canada and repeat any of these jokes you're hearing. They will be greeted with silence. And if you ever repeat the Randy joke that you have not heard yet, it will be greeted with deafening silence, and then a bunch of lads will take you out back and beat you up. Actually, in Canada, when we tell jokes, we tell them about newfies. So everyone knows what a newfie is. Newfies are from the province of Newfoundland and Labrador.
Evan?
Oh, mate, seriously. Honestly. Poor Evan.
I'll say that's all off the record.
So. Yeah. So we make fun of newfies. They're Newfoundlanders pride themselves in not joining Confederation until, like, what was it, 1956? In other words, Newfoundland was still a colony of Britain. Until 1956, they were not part of Canada, and they pride themselves in that distinction, that they held out to the bitter end before they, you know, became part of this new country. At any rate, Newfoundlanders, if you've ever heard a Newfoundland accent, you'll understand why they get made fun of. It's like this kind of bastardized version of an Irish Scottish accent. It's absolutely unique. We all love it. And everyone loves imitating it, and we make fun of them. So an example of a good newfie joke is, how many Newfoundlanders does it take to change a light bulb?
Change?
No, that's Christadelphians. A 100. 1 to hold the light bulb, 99 to turn the house. So on we go. Yeah. But beautiful province, you should visit it. Tons of natural beauty. We love newfies. And we also love to tell jokes about them. What's that? Oh, my goodness. Well, I can't do on-command accents. You'd have to Google it. Just, you know, Google YouTube newfies talking, and you'll be like, whoa. It's great. Actually, when two Newfoundlanders get together, no one else in Canada can understand what they're saying. That's that strong an accent. It's great.
I survived, David.
You did. You did, Jackie, but then you're an indefatigable personality who would bamboozle anybody who you meet. I was told to use that word. Thank you. So anyway, a brother approached me yesterday and said, Dave, you're nothing other than a good-for-nothing, dirty, rotten liar, and you lied to all of us. And I must say, I don't want to mention the brother's name, but I'm sure Asa felt very badly about saying that. Anyway, Asa pointed out that the variety of amaranth that I called bleeding heart, in actual fact, is called love lies bleeding. Bleeding heart is a different perennial, and it has those heart-shaped droplet blossoms. So thank you very much, Asa. I did not want to share horticultural information, because that's a subject near and dear to my heart. So love lies bleeding, which hopefully is not the case here at the Bible School for all the young people. I trust that, you know, they will meet success in whatever endeavors they have put their hearts to. As is often the case at Bible school. So our subject today is Leaders Who Were Not. So we're going to look at three people. It's not an exhaustive list, but three individuals who should have been examples to the nation, should have provided leadership and spiritual guidance, and instead abrogated these responsibilities and became forces for darkness, evil, and destruction. And before we get into it, one thing, yeah, this is a huge rant of mine, but leadership, true leadership, and Jesus said it. You know, what did he do? He knelt down and he washed his disciples' feet. Leadership is service. You look at leaders, whether in the Bible, whether in the spiritual world, whether in the secular world, true leaders serve. And you can always tell a bad leader when, you know, that man or woman enjoys the position because of the status it affords. That's leadership for the glory, not for the service. And all of these individuals here got caught up in the kind of glory or the status or the power their position afforded them. That's bad leadership. True leadership is an onerous, hard task. It's work, right? So if you aspire to leadership in the ecclesia, be prepared to work hard. In effect, you better be a good jackass, because in the you know, sense of you put your back to it. If your aspiration is respect, honor, and praise, do us all a favor, walk out that door and never let us see you again, because you're going to do more harm than good. That's bad leadership, and that's what these individuals represent. Leadership is exercised through work. That's it. You're doing the hard yards. And if you don't want to do the hard yards, then, you know, that's fine. I get it. I get, you know, we're all entitled to be lazy on occasion. So this first person we want to look at is Ishbosheth. It's not advancing. Where's my tech team? What happened?
Just hit escape and restart your slideshow. Escape.
Okay. Escape.
ESC.
Oh, ESC. I don't know that, Lisa.
That's frozen.
Frozen. Oh.
Use that one instead.
Did it?
4 hours ago.
Oh, yeah, sweet. Yeah. Cheers, mate. Honestly, thank you. Wonderful. We're good. All right. We don't know a whole lot about Ishbosheth, other than he was probably the sole surviving son of Saul. You got to ask yourself a question. Why wasn't he not on Mount Gilboa? He wasn't. He wasn't a young man. He was 40 years old. So, you know, what was that all about? Everything we know about Ishbosheth is a character. He was weak. He was vacillating, and the man lacked courage. So, interestingly, Ishbosheth is a certain kind of bad leader. He didn't aspire to it, but he let someone else manipulate him and cajole him and bully him into assuming the role. Right? That was Ishbosheth. And that's kind of an interesting, you know, aspect of the human condition, isn't it? You know, if someone said, hey, mate, hey, you know, you over there, I got a job for you, and it's going to be a good job. You're going to be king. You're going to be a leader. You know, we need you. You come forward. You know, we're going to park you up here, and you're going to do this, this, and this, and this, and that's your calling, and that's something you ought to do. Right. Really? Do I need you to tell me that? Or if my natural inclination wasn't to fill that role, is that good advice to give to anybody who might not be naturally inclined to show some leadership? Yeah, that was Ishbosheth. The man had absolutely no natural talent. And the only talent he seemed to have was listening to a stronger personality tell him what to do. That is, you know, that's not good. You know, that's not the kind of person we ought to be. And, you know, very often we might think to ourselves, well, I'll tell you an example. This is, we have a sister in our meeting. She's absolutely amazing. Like, enthusiasm explodes out of her every single day of her life. And she was in the public teaching system at a time when it became quite challenging, you know, for teachers who were, you know, maybe faith-based and, you know, had a religious denominational background. As, you know, we're all aware, certain priorities were put in place in the public system. And there were, you know, certain courses you had to take and certain positions you at least needed to speak to. And she felt compelled that she was in this position to basically rail against it. You know, she felt that if she didn't make a stand and she didn't speak out against, you know, what was going on, she was a coward. And she said, no, you know, a coward won't enter the kingdom of God. And unfortunately, her vociferousness at this point in time resulted in her termination. And she really needed the job. And, you know, we talked to her on a number of occasions. And, you know, we said, look, you know, there's a time and place. And, you know, our take is that a lot of this stuff's going to get paid lip service to. And then eventually everyone's going to kind of move along and get back to the work of teaching. So stay the course. You know, there parapet, get it shot off, to what did you accomplish? And in the end, she accomplished nothing, and all she, you know, achieved was unemployment. So it was not that, you know, and she's an awesome, amazing human being, and I'm not in any way likening her to Ishbosheth, but there was a time and place to assume a role of leadership. And unfortunately, my feeling and takeaway was that, you know, that was not good timing. While we all, you know, kind of agreed with the issues and the concerns and whatnot, time and place. Anyway, it was not Ishbosheth's time and place to be, you know, to assume this role. It ended up going very, very badly. So he allowed himself to be manipulated by Abner and, you know, a power struggle with David for the kingdom. And, you know, if we turn back to 2 Samuel 2, you know, it's good to read, you know, what it is that actually happened. And you know, the other personality that comes through in all of this is Abner. Abner was a very interesting character. He was Saul's Joab, fiercely loyal to the house, but a wily operator and an opportunist. And someone given to political expediency. That was Abner. He did not serve, in the end, the interest of the nation. Because as we read in 2 Samuel 2, meanwhile, Abner, son of Ner, the commander of Saul's army, had taken Ishbosheth, son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. He made him king over Gilead, Asherai, and Jezreel, and also over Ephraim, Benjamin, and all Israel. Ishbosheth, the moment Abner approached you, you should have said, you know what, you know, I know that your power base is my father's family, but I'm not going to play your game. I'm walking away. This is over. That's what a genuinely courageous man would have said, and he would have walked away from this opportunity to be the king. Instead, he allowed himself to be used, and in the end, he was so ineffective and so ridiculous and so incapable of functioning in any reasonable capacity. If you turn over to 2 Samuel 3, during the war between the house of Saul and verse 6, in the house of David, Abner had been strengthening his own position in the house of Saul. Now Saul had a concubine named Rizpah, daughter of Aiah, and Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Why did you sleep with my father's concubine?" Abner's response was very angry. He said, "Am I a dog's head on Judah's side? This very day I am loyal to the house of your father Saul, to his family and friends. I haven't handed you over to David, yet now you accuse me of an offense involving this woman." Whoa, this was going nuts. What was Abner saying when he took the concubine? And Ishbosheth had every right to object. What was that a declaration of? Yeah, I'm really king. I get the king's women. I'm the king. That's why Solomon killed his brother Adonijah. Remember when Adonijah wanted Abishag the Shunammite as his wife? You want the previous king's wife? No. That declares you king. So Abner gets, Ishbosheth finally lodges a single protest over a perfectly legitimate concern on his part. Abner, you know, basically just rips him. And at that point, you talk about pathetic. He goes, I'm going to give the kingdom to David. I don't like what you just said to me. This is over. Like, Ishbosheth, man, wake up. Look, this guy's using you. So, you know, Abner goes to David. Look, we're done. Make an agreement with me. I'll turn the kingdom over to you. David says, good, I have one stipulation. I want my wife back. Remember Michael? Got given to this other guy, Paltiel, son of Laish. The only other thing Ishbosheth managed to accomplish in his reign was taking Michael off this poor guy and handing her over to Abner, who then handed her over to David. This situation was, you know, an absolute pathetic display of patheticness in every respect. And, you know, this man Ishbosheth, I mean, there's parts of him that you have to feel sorry for. He's pitiable. But being pitiable doesn't necessarily make you good. You can exercise great evil and look like you're deserving of sympathy and support. And Ishbosheth was that guy. What he did and what he chose to do and how he let himself get used caused a ton of harm. That civil war between Judah and Israel that played out over 7 years left a permanent scar on the nation. It just perpetuated itself through their history. It never ended. And interestingly, you go to Ezekiel and the prophecy of the two sticks, it doesn't end until Jesus comes back. That's how pervasive this whole situation was. That's how damaging it was to the nation. And Ishbosheth, this weakling, facilitated this process. So in the end, what happens? He's without respect, without dignity, without honor. And a couple of guys come in and kill him and take his head to David. And that didn't end well for them because David didn't like that. So he ended up killing those two guys. So that's the story of Ishbosheth, and it's a sad one. So, all right, now I got to hit this. All right, that brings us to our next example. And I'm assuming we're all reasonably familiar with the story of Ahithophel, who he was, what he was, and what happened. And it is, you know, a famous tale of, you know, love turned to hate, support turned to revenge. It really kind of epitomizes that process that can play out in our lives where everything good goes dark. That's Ahithophel. We know that, you know, you look at how his role in the nation was really quite remarkable. And it might be a little bit of a portent of, what may have gone wrong with Ahithophel and why it may have gone wrong. You know, you look at 16 verse 23, and this is what's described. This is how Ahithophel is described. Now, you know, verse 23 of 2 Samuel 16. Now, in those days, the advice of Ahithophel that he gave was like that of one who inquires of God. That was how both David and Absalom regarded all of Ahithophel's advice. Isn't that interesting? This man had an amazing reputation. When you talked to Ahithophel, you thought that was like talking to God. Now, I don't know. Maybe Ahithophel should have toned down those expectations, or at least, you know, made sure that reputation didn't gain traction. But the sense we get about Ahithophel is that he quite enjoyed the status. Now, it didn't mean that he was, you know, ipso facto some ungodly, wicked man at the outset, but his reputation exceeded what should be afforded any human being, right? So, word to the wise, when we exercise a position of leadership in our community, when, you know, by dint of this, that, or the other thing, you know, we might be sought out for, you know, advice, for counsel, for guidance. Maybe we're older now and, you know, we might be viewed as someone who consistently provides helpful input. If you begin to notice that that is becoming a consistent, regular, you know, affair, such that whatever you say seems to be taken hold of and treated as gospel, the warning to all of us is, you know, at that point, you need to put a stop to it. That is not a healthy dynamic in any group. And the last community on the planet that should be, you know, creating those kinds of, you know, statuses and elevations and positions is one that claims to be Bible-based. We do not need leadership like that. Our teacher is Jesus. Our spiritual instruction flows from the Bible. The rest of us, on occasion, can maybe regurgitate things that are helpful. That's it. Once that goes beyond it, once you start, you know, accruing to yourself some kind of power or authority or reputation or standing that starts to feel a little bit like adulation rather than just, you know, two equals sharing, you know, we need to say, you know what? You there, you simmer yourself down. You're not that, all this and all that. And to the rest of us who are overly inclined to listen, you know, where are you going with this? You know, what do you say about yourself? Yeah, I'm, you know, we're all smart. We're all literate. We all read. We all can inquire. We can all learn. Where does anyone get a leg up over another? But that's what happened to Ahithophel. He got a big leg up. And wow, did it ever go to his head. He was afforded enormous respect. We know that, you know, that was Eliab, the father of Bathsheba, and Uriah the Hittite were listed amongst David's mighty men. He was a close friend and confidant of David. And it would be, you know, let's just turn to the two psalms that I have referenced, as they really speak to the intimacy that David enjoyed with this man. And, you know, again, you know, this cuts both ways. David himself personally retained his spiritual autonomy. David was a prophet in his own right. He wrote psalms. The word of God flowed through David. The psalms that he wrote are, you know, epiphanal to our understanding of the Lord Jesus Christ. So David's status, as it were, was, you know, unassailable in as much as he, you know, himself had this enormously close relationship to his heavenly Father. And David consistently sought out the advice and counsel of godly men. And in the day, Ahithophel was that man. He was affording David good advice. He was affording him spiritual counsel. You know, if we turn to Psalm 41, what does David say? And, you know, the betrayal was devastating to David. He, you know, it, and this is when David was in a state of debilitation. It's been suggested that David went through a period of intense illness, possibly a leprosy type of illness, which would have been viewed as like God's hand against him. Psalm 41, verse 7, all my enemies whispered together against me. They imagined the worst for me, saying, a vile disease has afflicted him. He will never get up from the place where he lies. David must have been quite ill. Even my close friend, someone I trusted, who has shared my bread, has turned against me. Now that was Ahithophel. And whether David sensed the tide had turned or whether it was only until Absalom's rebellion that Ahithophel's full, you know, feelings towards David were evident. Nonetheless, David records what it felt like, what it was that happened. And this was his close friend, someone I trusted. And then we go over to Psalm 55. And, you know, David's words are really even more poignant in respect to what it was that had happened. and again, you know, this is descriptive of the situation that was beginning to envelop David in the city. Verse 10 of Psalm 55, day and night they prowl about on its walls, malice and abuse are within it, destructive forces are at work in the city, threats and lies never leave its streets. If an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were rising against me, I could hide. But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship at the house of God as we walked about among the worshipers. This is Ahithophel. This is David reflecting on what it is that happened. This is how close they were, how good a friend they were, the fellowship they enjoyed. You know, this is this man, and he's now turned against David. Now, why did he turn against David? Well, the answer is obvious. Ahithophel was Bathsheba's grandfather. And it is evident, and it never, in all fairness, explicitly says in the Bible, oh, FYI, Ahithophel is Bathsheba's grandfather, and he hated what David did to the family, and he set his heart against him and nursed deep and bitter hatred and a desire for revenge. Doesn't actually say that. I don't know what other conclusion you can draw. If you can think of another conclusion that's reasonable, by all means, share it. My suggestion is that when David did what he did, Ahithophel turned. Now, the question is, you know, was that a reasonable response? Would any of us felt differently had that been our family? If someone who was respected, you know, the king, I mean, okay, let's put it this way. Here's somebody we love dearly, and they enjoy a position of influence and leadership in our circle, maybe in our ecclesia, and they turn around and do something absolutely appalling, like, wow, bad. You know, like, kind of, okay, this is all over bad. Would it be reasonable to react as Ahithophel did? I don't know. I mean, would you go through at least a period of hatred and intense anger? I have to imagine we all would. That, it, you know, how would you not feel those emotions in response to somebody wronging your loved ones? You're going to be furious. And for a period of time, you might imagine how you could seek some form of retribution and revenge. You know, maybe not everyone's like me. I know I would. I think I have on occasion, you know, had those feelings cross through me. The challenge is, and Ahithophel's challenge was, as the situation played out, it was evident that God had forgiven David and that this situation was going to push through. David married Bathsheba, the child died, but he went on to have Solomon, who in the end was chosen by God to sit on the throne. All the players stayed put. Nobody left. And it was evident as time went on that David was suffering, you know, dearly for, you know, what he had done. The consequences were reverberating through David's life. They were reverberating through David's family. Would you step back and say, you know what? God's looking after this. I don't need to intervene. I think that's what Ahithophel should have done. I think that's what any of us should do when confronted with similar circumstances. God was sorting it out in his own time, and David was suffering dearly. David himself never really recovered from what he did. It impacted him personally. So considering all that, considering the genuineness of David's repentance, his desire to make amends as best he could, what should have Ahithophel's reaction have been? How was he to personally cope with the hurt? How do you deal with that hurt? Anyway, Ahithophel's challenge was to deal with the hurt and find a way to push through. You know, we talk about challenges that come into our lives. Talk about the challenges that came into David's life. That probably represents a kind of challenge that really is enormously difficult. It's actually easier for someone to do something to you personally. Like if somebody comes at me personally, tries to hurt me personally, to forgive that, that's an easier process. It's much harder when it's somebody next to you who you don't think deserved what happened to them. That's a whole different kind of hurt, whole different kind of process to get through. And Ahithophel, hey Ahithophel, you're a wise man. You're a godly man. You know the drill. You know the truth. Now the rubber hits the road. What are you going to do about it, Ahithophel? And this man, unfortunately, chose to nurture hatred. And he planned for revenge. He was cooking up a scheme. And when Joab unwittingly gave Ahithophel the means by which to execute it, because when Joab got David to bring Absalom back to Jerusalem, Ahithophel must have sidled up to Absalom and began to encourage what he was doing. And the easiest thing in the world with a vainglorious guy like Absalom, in many respects, Ahithophel was to Absalom what Abner was to Ishbosheth, except Absalom obviously had a lot more going on, but anyway, had the hair. Ahithophel was able to, you know, play up Absalom's, you know, natural proclivities, and before you know it, boom, everything exploded. And Ahithophel was at the hot and burning center of it. It's an understandable process. It's a situation that we can relate to, or at least understand. But in the end, if we get consumed by these dark instincts, which lodge in all of us, and if anyone stands here and claims to be devoid of the capacity to be angry and to be hateful and to seek revenge, you are clearly, you know, either a zombie or not a human being, because we all have that capacity. Anger is as natural an emotion as you could. I guarantee you, every single day of this Bible school, we're experiencing moments of anger. In fact, they're so commonplace to us, we almost don't realize we're angry. You know, we might, oh, I'm tired. Oh, I'm, you know, I'm annoyed. Or, you know, but the simple fact is we're angry. We're angry. And, you know, fortunately, civilized society compels us to, like, you know, not get too crazy. Although I hear the young lads were just about knocking each other out last night on the lawn, but hey, maybe that was a good way to process their anger. Who knows? Maybe we all should do that. Gordon and I in the middle of the, having a tussle. But I'm not angry at you, Gordon, you know. Oh, good. It's a mutual admiration society. But Ahithophel was very angry, and he engineered this rebellion, and the consequences for the nation, again, were incredibly dire. And, you know, one of the things that we often ask ourselves is, you know, you take that civil war that occurred between Israel and Judah for 7 years. You know, why wouldn't Israel have said, right, Saul's dead, his sons are dead, God has anointed David, let's just go with David. But that didn't happen. People didn't make that switch right away. I mean, Ishbosheth was a son of Saul and by rights a legitimate contender to the throne. I don't think people in Israel were generally being bad or stupid or easily led. They were genuinely confused over, well, who should be king? You know, here's David, here's Ishbosheth. When does the transition occur? When does the transition occur? And I think Ahithophel was able to play into that same sentiment. Here's this king, He's compromised. He's sick, maybe on the verge of death. Oh, do we just hang in with this guy? When does the transition occur? You know, that was like Queen Elizabeth not abdicating. She just hung in there till like 99. You know, the Dutch queen abdicated and turned the kingdom over to Willem. Did I pronounce that right, John? Willem? Near enough. You know, that happens all the time in, you know, monarchies. When do I transition to the next guy? Ahithophel could have reasonably argued, like, we got Absalom. Look at this guy. Poof. Healthy, good looking, like his dad, good man. Let's transition to, you know, a new king. So, admittedly, the nation, well, should we? Shouldn't we? Should we? Shouldn't we? And that's when, you know, wickedness and badness can insert itself and manipulate a situation, and Ahithophel did just that. So, you know, a sad, tragic example of a leader in the nation who allowed hatred, bitterness, and resentment, and a desire for revenge turn him into just a dark, evil guy. And he certainly ranks amongst one of the most tragic and sad examples of what not to do in the face of a particular sort of challenge. Right. Now, I need a little help. No, not that. Mm-mm. Good. Oh, all right. That was my second slide. So, I already said all of this. There it is on the screen. Nursed hatred for David, unable to forgive, and an example of disillusionment. Don't let expectations get so high that you can't cope. And we will disappoint each other. Sorry about that. Moving right along. Okay, Shimei. And we've already touched on Shimei, the man who cursed David. So, I need a little help, Asa. I'm sorry I didn't gotta get this sorted out earlier. Hold in here. So this has been kind of collated. There's three pages. One, two, three, like so.
Yep.
So everyone, this is a, the reason I am handing this out as a handout is because, yeah, Adam, give you a hand there. Is it couldn't get turned into an overhead. I reached out to my son-in-law, Henry, who's nothing short of brilliant in every respect. And I said, Henry, can we turn this into a PowerPoint slide? And he goes, Dave, there's just way too much information. You apparently are not aware of how PowerPoint works. And I'm like, well, Henry, you're not the first one to tell me that. Mary says all the time, Dave, you don't know how PowerPoint works. So I don't know how PowerPoint works. Clearly, I don't know how a lot of things work. So I appreciate your forbearance and tolerance of my technological incompetence. So I did think this was important information to share, and I'm putting it out as a handout. So who is Shimei? He was a prominent man of Benjamin. He was a member of the house of Saul. And he was famous for the fact that he came out and he cursed David as he fled Jerusalem. And it is a kind of an interesting, I love this story. Because, you know, one thing to me, which speaks to the veracity of this record, is the absolute humanity of everything that's going on. The Bible characters are not reframed as some kind of heroic, hard-to-believe individuals. These people do and say real things. We've all heard the similar types of stuff come out of the mouths of different individuals at different points. That's just the simple truth of it. And, you know, you get this man, Shimei, and he comes out in 2 Samuel 16. His name was Shimei, son of Gera, cursed as he came out. He pelted David and all the king's official with stones, threw all the troops and the special guard were on David's right and left. And we discussed this, actually, so my apologies to my discussion group. We're going to repeat a few things here. But when Shimei pelted David with stones, what, in effect, was he saying by that act, pelting him with stones? He was worthy of death because of adultery, because of Bathsheba. Because under the law, that was the penalty. Do we need more? We do. Okay, there's some more. It was stony. Oh, so I love AC. He's like so uber competent. And even though he makes me feel very incompetent, you know, who cares? There's got to be a kind of, you know how the cosmos kind of balance themselves? Ace is there to balance out guys like me. So he pelted David. In effect, he was saying, God didn't do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to stone you to death, David, for the sin of adultery. He says, get out, you murderer, you scoundrel. And he cursed him. I always find it a bit amusing how sensitive we are to using bad words. Because the Bible's, you know, either uses bad words or records people using a lot of bad words. I mean, obviously, they'd be a bit meaningless in Hebrew. One of the funnest things I ever did was learn a bunch of swear words in Arabic. Because one of my best mates in dental school was a Orthodox Jewish kid whose wife was a Moroccan Jew who spoke Arabic and Hebrew. And so he said, are there good swear words in Hebrew? And he goes, yeah, but they're nothing compared to Arabic. So he taught us the Arabic ones. So he finally goes, you do realize and know what you're saying. Could you quit saying what you're saying? And we're just like, my other friend and I were just giggling away, saying really bad things in Arabic. It was great. and yes, I'm a little immature. But he was just swearing, you know, just, poof, he was giving it, absolutely giving it. So, you know, this is when Abishai goes, oh, why is this guy talking? Please let me kill him. I want to kill him now. I want to take off his head. And David doesn't do anything at this point in time. He says, let him curse. God has said, curse David. And wow, what a difference between a godly man and an ungodly man. And I don't want to call Abishai ungodly. I think he was just excessively defensive of his uncle, who he loved dearly, as was Joab. But it wasn't the time and place. And, you know, it wasn't like David went, I don't want to hear it. He goes, I got to listen. I have seriously got to listen to this guy. Now is the time and place to listen to this. He shouldn't do it. He's going to pay for it in the end, but not today. Because today I have it coming. And that's what that was David's reaction. So Shimei just like going, just following him along this ridge, throwing stones. It's like, buddy, and he was absolutely, you know, what did he say? The kingdom will be returned to the house of, you know, Saul. Like, Shimei, not only are you an idiot, you're probably a bit delusional. I don't think Ahithophel and Absalom are inviting you in, but you somehow got it in your head that that's what's going to happen. Maybe you were hoping everyone would kill everyone and you'd be there to pick up the pieces. Who knows? This guy had delusions of grandeur, and he was, you know, a foul-mouthed loser. But this was a prominent member of his family. He was a leader in Benjamin. You know, what's going on, man? And, you know, to be quite honest, we talked about the wheat and the tares. Shimei was a full-blown tare, and there he was in the nation. And David was going to leave him there for the rest of his life. Shimei wasn't getting dealt with until he was an old man. But this guy with his corrosive, hateful, nasty attitude, this, you know, like, could you even call this revenge? Like, revenge, what are you talking about? This David had been king for years now. You hadn't said anything until now. You were an opportunist and you saw a chance to vent your poison. That's what Shimei did. He was just letting that poison come out. So he cursed David. And then, this is great. Like, dude, you need to shut up. He meets David. Everyone comes rushing down to the Jordan River when David had defeated the forces of Absalom. And it was quite the meetup at the Jordan River. He returns to Jerusalem. Mephibosheth shows up. Ziba shows up. The men of Judah, the men of Israel show up. Everyone shows up. And in fact, one of the things David did, which was a bit interesting, is he booted Joab as captain of the guard. He said to Amasa, are you not my flesh and blood? May God deal with me if ever so severely, if you are not the commander of my army for life in the place of Joab. So, you know, David was taking care of business right now. So in 2 Samuel 19, verse 16, Shimei sent a Gera, the Benjamite, from Bahurim, hurried down with the men of Judah to meet King David. And he brings 1,000 Benjamites, along with Ziba, the steward of Saul's household, and his 15 sons and 20 servants. You know, this guy was something. He had a retinue of 1,000 men. He wasn't some, you know, muck just hiding in a corner. Shimei, you know, could produce the goods. He was a leader in the tribe of Benjamin. He falls prostrate, and this is his line. May my Lord not hold me guilty. Do not remember how your servant did wrong on the day my Lord the king left Jerusalem. Buddy, are you an idiot? You just wouldn't shut up and you threw stones. Nobody's forgetting what you did. You know, kind of goose is cooked. Probably not a good line to use on somebody when you've been a complete idiot and you're trying to make amends. Don't tell them to forget what you did, because that's going to make them remember it all the more. Not a good line. But Shimei was not exactly a well-put-together human being. May the king put it out of his mind. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. But today I have come here as the first from the tribes of Joseph to come down and meet my lord the king. And Abishai, shouldn't Shimei be put to death for this? He cursed the Lord's anointed. You gotta love him. And David uses his famous line, what does this have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? What right do you have to interfere? Should anyone be put to death in Israel today? Don't I know that today I'm king over Israel? He looks at Shimei and goes, you're not going to die. And the king promised with an oath. That was a remarkable interchange. And you know what? Every word that came out of Shimei's mouth just shrieked insincerity. He said all the wrong things, or at least he said the right things to let you know what in fact was in his heart. Because he tried to pass it all off as like, oh, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know what I was doing. You know, oh, I'm sorry. Don't remember. It's in a way, and again, you get this kind of profile emerging over and over again. And these men who were leaders and men of prominence, and, you know, they find themselves in these kind of pathetic places. They're not owning anything. They're not genuinely repenting of anything. They're not really confessing anything. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all like, oh, don't look here, look there. You know, Ahithophel, what does he do in the end? He goes and hangs himself. When he saw that his plans were undone, and that kind of reminded me of a scene out of Lord of the Rings when the good wizard, you know, Gandalf goes head to head with, what is it, Saruman? Who's the Saruman, he's the white up in the tower, and, you know, they have the great big bang. Anybody into Lord of the Rings? Yeah, well, I am, in case you hadn't noticed. You know, the battle of the white wizards. Well, that was a battle between Hushai and Ahithophel. It was a battle of wits, except God was working to give Hushai the leg up. But when Ahithophel realized that, you know, and he knew if his plan wasn't followed, he took this way out that was sad and broken. He wasn't prepared to own anything. He goes, right, I didn't succeed. I'm tapping out, and I'm going to do it permanently. You know, what his fate will be in that day, who knows? But, you know, this you get this pattern of an unwillingness to accept responsibility for the choices I've made. There was a way back for all of them. David would have forgiven Ahithophel. He certainly would have accommodated Ishbosheth. He forgives Shimei, even though Shimei's confession was worth, you know, the toilet paper it was written on. You know, he was prepared to do it. He would have done it. But none of them could avail themselves of David's magnanimity. Instead, they sunk down into these deep holes of, here I am in darkness. I guess I'll just stay in darkness till the day I die. Sad and a broken response. Now, the handout I've given you, and I hope there's one for me, because years later, and how much time do we have, Asa?
5 minutes.
Oh, 5 minutes. Okay. Yeah. That's good. So the handout is, I've juxtaposed the events involving Shimei and Psalm 10. Psalm 10 is written about Shimei and what he was like and how he behaved. And you know, you can just take this home and consider it at your leisure. But years later, David, you know, says to Solomon, he goes, I want you to put Zadok and, who was the other priest? Abiathar. Abiathar, the priest of Eli's lineage. He goes, you need to put him out of the priesthood. He supported Adonijah. You're going to deal with Joab. He supported Adonijah. His execution's long overdue. You're going to deal with him. And he also said, you're going to deal with Shimei. I want you to deal with Shimei. And does anyone remember what Solomon did? He made Shimei move to Jerusalem. And he said, you stay here for the rest of your life. Now, Shimei wasn't a young man. I mean, it wasn't like he was going to have to put in, you know, years and years and years and years and years. He would have, you know, come to a natural end. But what compelled Shimei to leave Jerusalem and seal his fate? What did he do? Yeah, he was chasing runaway slaves. And what did the law say about runaway slaves? They run, you lose them, right? You don't get them back. Isn't that interesting? The law, in one fell swoop, absolutely hollowed out the institution of slavery. Because if your slave can run away and you can't get him back, you better be very nice to these guys. Because if they don't like you, they can go bye-bye. And you can't do a thing about it. What did Shimei do? He went after him. Broke the law. Broke the law. Broke his promise. This man could not, you know, again, the things that this guy said weren't worth anything. They never were. Shimei never changed. And in many respects, you read through the psalm, he epitomizes evil. You look at Psalm 10, verse 5. His ways are always grievous. Thy judgments are far above out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. See that? Your judgments. He can't even see your judgments. Verse 7, his mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. Verse 10, he croucheth and humbleth himself. Now, there's a little dispute about the translation. I'm going to go with the KJV. I prefer the NIV, but suit yourself. The NIV puts it a bit differently. In the King James, which I consider closer to the original Hebrew, it says, he croucheth and humbleth himself, that the poor may fall by his strong ones. He has said in his heart, this is rich, God hath forgotten. He hideth his face, he will never see it again. What did he say to David? Don't remember. What, do you think David wasn't going to remember? You think God's not going to remember? Like, seriously, man. Like, what's in your head? You're an opportunist. You're just out there for you. You're bad medicine. Back in verse 2, the wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. Verse 3, boasteth of his heart's desire, blesseth the covetous. Verse 4, God is not in all his thoughts. And on it goes. It's just a searing indictment of wickedness. So you know, you're like, oh, Shimei, oh, poor guy, you know, he was sorry. He said sorry. He was a good Canadian. He said sorry. Just like Joey said, even the Canadian government finally had to put a stop to it. It meant none of it. Guy was hollow inside. And in the end, did he deserve to be put to death by Solomon? He sure did. And, you know, one thing, you know, and this was something, you know, when I was growing up, my parents emphasized to me over and over again, is don't second guess God's judgment in a matter. Respect God's conclusions. And one experience my dad had growing up was taking a course in university, and I ended up taking the same course as Bible as Literature, and it's where they push the documentary hypothesis theory and the Yahwehistic and Elohistic texts that are interleaved. You know, I don't know. I get into arguments with my beloved son-in-law, Henry, about it. Personally, I think it's highly speculative. Not down with it. But the thing that, you know, came through was this intense disrespect for the Word of God in this course. And my dad said it did shake him a bit after, you know, the course was over. These guys were, you know, you idiot undergrads. I am so smart. I am the professor. But, you know, afterwards, my dad said, you know, one phrase that he really, you know, kind of kept coming back to over and over again is, man is without excuse, God beyond reproof. And when we look at the, you know, these three individuals and their fates, they represent what was right and appropriate in the eyes of God. These were his judgments and his conclusions in respect to the conduct that these men chose to play out in their lives. And it's my, you know, suggestion, brethren and sisters, is that it's important to take note, because these are the guys you don't want to be. Thank you very much.